The Small Business Rundown is the official podcast of the National Federation of Independent Business, the member-driven voice of small business. NFIB and our members advocate to keep America's small businesses strong and independent in Washington, D.C., all 50 states, and the nation's courts.
Welcome to the Small Business Rundown, your place for information on independent businesses' victories and challenges in Washington, D.C. and state capitals. I'm Adam Temple, NFIB Senior Vice President of Advocacy. Today we have a couple of guests to talk to us about the Regulatory Flexibility Act, or RFA. We'll talk about how federal agencies often fail to abide by it and what it means for small businesses. We'll hear from NFIB Small Business Legal Center's staff attorney, Rob Smith, and NFIB Government Relations Manager, Josh McLeod, to explain why RFA matters for small business owners and what small businesses are calling on Congress to do about it. Later, we'll also hear from an NFIB member in Minnesota, David Henrick, about the burdens of one-size-fits-all regulations on his business. Rob, Josh, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Adam. I'm glad to be here on the Small Business Rundown with you and looking forward to talking about the RFA today.
Thanks, Adam. Appreciate the opportunity.
Happy to have you. So, Rob, I'm going to start with you. You and at the Small Business Legal Center recently published a white paper on the issue of the RFA. Can you just start by giving us a little bit of background?
Sure. So I'll just give a broad overview. I think you just mentioned it, but the Regulatory Flexibility Act, the acronym for it is the RFA. So that's what we're referring to. If I had to summarize the act in one sentence for our listeners, it would be that the RFA is meant to address the disproportionate impact of federal regulations on small businesses. And it's meant to do that by requiring that agencies consider and take into account during their rulemaking procedures the needs and resources of small businesses. So think of the Environmental Protection Agency, Occupational Health and Safety Administration, Department of Labor. That's what we're referring to. So those are federal agencies. And according to one government source, there are 434 federal agencies. So the Regulatory Flexibility Act, for anyone listening that wants to read it or look into it a little bit more, they can Google it. It's 5 U.S. Code 601 to 612, Public Law 96-354. And just a little specific background about the RFA. So it was signed by President Carter in 1980. It passed a Democratic Congress, both the House and Senate, unanimously. So think about the prospects of that today. And it's really quite an achievement. It had 30 original sponsors, bipartisan sponsors. And just an interesting tidbit for our listeners, one of these original co-sponsors is actually still serving in the Senate, Senator Patrick LaHaye from Vermont.
Thanks, Rob. What was the impetus? What led to this becoming a law?
Well, to summarize, we saw a very expansive and significant growth in the number of administrative agencies throughout the middle part of the 20th century. And we saw a growth in the number of regulations they were putting out and the impact of all of these regulations on regulated entities like small businesses. So by the 1970s and 1980s, it was well acknowledged by everyone that there were steps that needed to be taken to minimize that impact and provide small businesses for the ability to have a role in rulemaking. And since the RFA, unfortunately, that has just continued to grow. According to one government source, there are now over 400 federal agencies in the federal government alone. That's not even taking into account state government. The source of the regulations where they're all listed spans over 180,000 pages now. So unfortunately, we are seeing a continued trend in government by bureaucrat and by regulation, and it hurts small businesses.
And has it been effective, the RFA?
In the short term, yeah. There is some evidence that it was quite effective. So just to go over the timeline a little bit, President Carter signed it in 1980. It went into effect the following year in 1981. According to some historical data, in 1981, the agencies really saw a restriction on the ability to enact rules. There were one-size-fits-all rulemaking. In the 5 years prior to the RFA, there were 7,356 rules and almost 5,000 proposed rules each year on average. In the five-year span after the RFA, the average per year was only 5,763 rules and around 3,500 proposed rules. So in the short term, yes, the RFA was effective. In the long term, unfortunately, no. agencies learned how to wiggle out of the RFA's requirements. They began to adopt a box checking and minimalist attitude toward the RFA, and they began to take advantage of loopholes within the structure of the RFA.
Josh, do you want to add on to that?
Yeah, I think we're seeing an unprecedented growth of the regulatory state right now. From January 2021 through March of 2023, there have been $360 billion of costs promulgated by agencies. I think it's over 220 million paperwork hours. So just massive numbers. President Biden's first year as president was the largest increase in terms of regulatory costs in the first year of a presidency ever. So these are falling on small businesses disproportionately hard. The intent of the RFA is clear. You know, it's just unfortunate that a small business now has to hire a lawyer, a compliance officer, to navigate these regulations instead of growing their business, hiring new employees.
I think Josh makes a good point about the financial costs, and that's one problem with the RFA, and it's an area that's not addressed in the white paper, but I think it needs to be understood, and it's important because our small business owners understand it. These regulations that come with the growth of rulemaking and the administrative state, they are cumulative. So what these agencies do, and this is problematic, they look at their regulation in a vacuum and they say, okay, even if this imposes $1,000 on a small business, it's only $1,000. But that's not how it actually works on the ground. And that's the problem. Congress has not mandated that agencies consider the cumulative effect of all of these regulations from each of the different agencies. So you can have one rule that says, oh, it's going to impose $1,000, but you may have 100 others. And when you take all of those rules together and combine the costs, you know, as small business owners know, that's a lot of money. It all adds up. So that's one area where a lot could be done to help small business owners.
Death by a thousand cuts.
Yep.
Josh, you've written on this issue as well. You recently had an op-ed in the Washington Times. Can you explain a little bit about lack of compliance with the RFA, why that leads to the one-size-fits-all regulations that we're seeing more often?
Yeah, absolutely. So as Rob astutely noted, the RFA was intended to address the disproportionate impact of federal regulations on small businesses. We know larger businesses have lawyers, they have compliance officers to help navigate these complex regulatory issues. Small businesses often do not. So if agencies are not abiding by the RFA, then they, in effect, are ignoring this proportionate impact. So they're not taking into account the indirect costs of a regulation. To give it that as an example, EPA comes out with a rule on a heavy-duty truck. They take into account the effect to the manufacturer of the truck, but not the consumer, or not fully taking into account the effect to the consumer of the increased purchase price. Or things of that nature. So there's a lot of ways that agencies have gotten out of these requirements. The result is that if small businesses are treated the same as a larger company, then the small business must hire a lawyer or a compliance officer to help navigate the issues,
right,
just as the larger business does.
Do you have any examples of how this has negatively impacted small businesses in the real world?
Yeah, I mean, there's countless examples. One that Rob highlights in the paper is WOTUS.
Mm-hmm.
WOTUS, which is the Waters of the United States rule, it was a massive overreach by the EPA over wetlands and property. The EPA said this will not affect a significant number of small entities. Well, we beg to differ. Our farmers, our ranchers, our developers that we've heard from say the exact opposite. This will affect their farm. This will affect their business. So that's just one example, but there are many others that we could probably talk for days about.
And in your op-ed, you talk about how specific agencies are ignoring the RFA. Can you get into that a little bit more?
Yeah. So the Legal Center analyzed SBA's advocacy comment letters. They found 28 instances where agencies inadequately complied with RFA. That can mean they didn't take into account indirect costs. They just certified that it would not affect small businesses. There's a number of issues that we could discuss that where they just checked the box, as Rob alluded to.
Yeah, yeah. Rob, I'll put the same question to you. You talk to small business owners on a regular basis about a myriad of issues. Do you recall or do you know of any examples where these, what we keep calling one-size-fits-all regulations, have hurt small businesses that have gotten in touch with you?
Sure. So as Josh mentioned, WOTUS, Waters of the United States, that is a phrase that is included in the Clean Water Act, and it defines the limits of EPA's jurisdiction to regulate when a property owner can make improvements on their land and to what extent they need government authorization to do so. Has been a big one. That's one that we've heard from quite a few small businesses in the Small Business Legal Center on. We've had to field those questions. Again, the one-size-fits-all nature of these agency rules, not taking into account the differences between small business and large business, the resources that small businesses lack. For example, as it pertains to WOTUS, the lack of resources to pay the hundreds of thousands of dollars that it takes to get a permit to make modifications on your land. Most small businesses just, you know, when they reach out to us, they can't afford that. That's not something they can easily take on. Another different example, you know, one that's out there for small businesses is the Department of Labor's independent contractor rule. And this was an egregious one because, you know, this was a 200-page proposed rule. And the Department of Labor said, well, it's only going to take 30 minutes to read and understand. Well, I don't know anybody that could read that many pages in 30 minutes and fully understand it, let alone a small business owner that is dealing with the day-to-day operations of their business, employees, payroll, et cetera. And DOL claimed it would only cost $25 to implement the entire rule, the compliance costs. You know, but we all know, and the small business owners listening know, that's just not right. That doesn't make sense. You know, if you change the definition of an independent contractor and now categorize that person that was formerly an independent contractor as an employee, there are a lot of employee benefits under other federal laws that the business will be required to provide, such as health care, retirement, paid leave. And the SBA noted that with this Department of Labor rule specifically, those costs could reach $15,000 or more dollars annually. You know, so that's just another example of the egregious nature of one agency is just not paying attention to the RFA, not giving consideration to small businesses, like reaching out to us at the SBLC with very significant concerns about how these rules are going to affect them.
All right. So, Josh, we know the problem. Agencies are ignoring or at least not complying with the obligations of the RFA, right? What can we do about it? What can Congress do about it to improve the situation?
Absolutely. Congress should immediately strengthen the RFA. It has not been updated in a number of years, and the time is ripe. And as this report alludes to, Congress should increase transparency of the regulatory process. They should require agencies to be transparent with the exact alternatives to regulation that they examine. Mm-hmm. Congress is already supposed to show that. So show their work. Increase transparency. Let us know exactly what you looked at instead of just issuing the burdensome rule. Let us see your work. Congress could provide SBA, Office of Advocacy, greater role in the rulemaking process, allow them to certify that agencies have conducted proper RFA analyses. That would be a pretty easy step that would help small businesses have a larger voice in the process. So agencies are now required under the RFA to examine alternatives to the regulation for small businesses. Oftentimes, as Rob has alluded to, it's just a box-checking exercise. We don't know exactly what they've looked at. They often just say, we looked at alternatives, nothing to see here. So it would make pretty simple sense to require those agencies to produce a detailed description of what they have examined.
Right. And is there any legislation currently before Congress that would help strengthen the RFA?
There is. Senator Ernst recently introduced the Prove It Act. NFIB supports this legislation. It would require a lot of the recommendations that we've discussed to go into effect and to strengthen the RFA. We think it's a really positive development, and hopefully Congress will take a serious look at it.
Great. Well, before we move on to our next guest, Rob, is there anything else that you'd like to add before we go?
Yeah, just a little bit. I want to touch on the points that Josh made in his answer to the last question. It's been almost 30 years since the last major amendment to the RFA. So it's well past time for Congress to look at making sure that this act is taken seriously by federal agencies. And before that last major amendment, the federal government recognized at that point that agencies were using exceptions to avoid RFA responsibilities, that they did as little as necessary to comply with the RFA, and that there were significant problems. And that context is what led to the amendment in the mid-90s. And we are seeing the same problems today.
Thanks, Josh. Anything to add?
Yeah. As Majority Leader Scalise noted in the May 17th podcast, we need to hear from you guys. We need to hear from businesses, and members of Congress, most importantly, need to hear from businesses about how regulations are affecting their businesses. So please tell us your stories, share your stories with members of Congress. That is a great way to make sure that the impact of regulations are known in Washington and that Congress can push back on these burdensome rules.
That's a good point. And we'll include information in the show notes on how folks can reach out to their members of Congress to take action so that they will hear from them, like you said. All right. Well, Rob and Josh, I appreciate the time you guys have taken to explore the issue with us today. It's been a good conversation, and we appreciate the time.
Great. Thanks, Adam.
Thanks, Adam, for having us.
I'd like to start by thanking our next guest, David Henrich, small business owner in Minnesota. I'll let David tell us a little bit more about his business. But first, David, I just want to thank you for taking the time out of your day to join us here on as we head into the weekend.
Oh, no, thank you for having me, Adam. Yeah, as you said, my name is David Henrich. I'm the president of Bergerson Caswell Incorporated. We are a diversified water well contractor in Maple Plain, Minnesota, just west of the Twin Cities. We've been around since 1948, operating in the commercial municipal well space, residential water wells and pumping systems. Do a lot of work in the geothermal, low temp geothermal industry, as well as doing a lot of environmental drilling and sampling throughout the state. And we've been doing a lot of that for a very long time. So we're well versed in water here, Caswell and myself. In 2018, I was the president of the National Groundwater Association, and the 2019 president of the Minnesota Water Well Association. And I'm the current chair on the Advisory Council on Wells and Borings to the Minnesota Department of Health. So I pay attention to water very closely.
Yeah, I'll bet. And I'm just curious, how did what was the need that was there back in the 40s to get this business started?
Well, I mean, rapid expansion. You know, we had urbanization, suburbanization, and so we had to. You know, Minnesota's always been a very strong groundwater state. We're very lucky to have the groundwater resources that we have. And that has allowed the state to, you know, without life, there isn't much, without water, there isn't much life. And so groundwater really allowed this state to spread out and, you know, put, you know, real solid economic centers all over an otherwise very remote region of the country.
Right. Well, and today we're talking about sort of this one size fits all regulatory state that we deal with, or that small businesses deal with, small and independent businesses. Can you just kind of give us your perspective broadly on your experience with federal regulations and the compliance environment that you deal with?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're a very niche industry, so we're really easy. You know, by and large, everybody goes to their faucet every day and turns it on, and water comes out. And so, you know, water is very much taken for granted in this country for sure, and in Minnesota in particular, 70% of that water comes from the ground. So our industry just has done a really good job for a really long time, and so we fly under the radar. But every once in a while, rules pop up that all of a sudden just are just massive, that sweep you into, you know, pools of regulation that you otherwise never were exposed to and really don't belong in. But because people don't take time to focus on who can really be impacted by rules, you know, you just inadvertently get caught up in the net.
Yeah. And there's been a lot of discussion about ambiguity or just sort of vagueness of some of the regulations. How do you, when you're not sure how to interpret a regulation that affects you, how does that affect your day to day?
Oh, well, I mean, the level of involvement I have, it really, you know, it's one of the, you can only plead ignorance if you don't know, right? And so I stay pretty well informed. So it's very constricting because we're not going to do things that aren't in accordance with laws, regulations, rules, you name it. You know, we're gonna play by the rule book, whatever that rule book might be. So you know, it can drastically alter, you know, the types of work you can engage in. I mean, we're dealing with a fairly stiff regulatory environment in Minnesota, and it's, you know, does everything from cripple your ability to innovate new technologies.
You bring up a good point, the impact of overlapping federal and state regulations. How big of a problem is that for you and other businesses?
Well, right now it's not, in our space, it's not too bad because by and large, groundwater has been regulated on a state-by-state basis. But if you look at like this, you know, this last iteration of the WOTUS rule, could have very easily encompassed, you know, groundwater under a very, very wide federal regulatory net, which certainly would have had impacts on our industry, particularly people working in the agricultural irrigation sector. You know, that coupled with the Maui case that went before the Supreme Court a couple of years ago with functional equivalent discharge, you know, you're starting to see how federal rules and groundwater and wells and what happens in our industry could very easily get caught up in federal regulation.
Yeah. And you mentioned the WOTUS rule that was released by the administration in January. When they did that, they specifically said there wouldn't be, quote, a significant impact on small businesses. I could probably guess your answer, but what's been your experience with that that characterization?
The average, the WOTUS rule that was released by the administration certainly did not fence out groundwater. Groundwater is not specifically excluded, it's implicitly included. So water well contracting companies are an average of 5.3 people per company. I think that probably qualifies as a small business.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of those businesses would have been impacted by this rule. So it's not possible to say that small businesses wouldn't be impacted because it would have impacted that industry, and almost all of our businesses are small businesses.
That's interesting. Aside from WOTUS, are there other regulations that you have to deal with on a daily basis in your business?
From a federal level? Well, yeah. I mean, this PFAS thing is to the forefront pretty hard right now. We're starting to see guidance on MCLs. And that's having a really, really major impact on water systems, water treatment systems, you know, water quality. And really, private wells, private water systems in general are finally starting to get talked about on a wider scale, which is a good thing and a bad thing, right? Because most people haven't been spending any time getting to know groundwater, getting to know private water systems. So it's really easy for people that think they already know what to do to you know, make assertions that don't really encompass getting a full read on the background of the industry, of the products we provide, of the people we serve, and what their needs are.
All right. I know you wear a number of hats in addition to independent and small business owner. You mentioned some of the leadership positions you've had within the industry. Do you have opportunities to talk with either state or federal legislators about the challenges that we're talking about right now?
Yeah. I've been doing fly-ins for the National Groundwater Association since I was in my late 20s. So I've been, you know, talking federally to people about our industry, what we do, keeping us in mind when the EPA is out trying to write rules and make rules. And by and large, we're not considered a big enough part of the water supply chain to listen to. And we don't aggregate because we're not big businesses, because we're not, you know, big corporate entities. We just fail to get the attention that we should get in these discussions. It's not for lack of trying. I mean, we've got a pretty, pretty solid group that's, you know, we have a great group that works at the National Groundwater Association. In fact, they've, you know, Ben Freck has worked with Josh McLeod over at NFIB on this WOTUS rule, trying to make sure we've got full background from everybody. So, I mean, I guess the thing I would say about working federally has been interesting working with partners, whether it be NFIB, NGWA, Water Quality Association, you know, being able to aggregate a big enough voice to actually get people to listen to our concerns.
Yeah, and you make a good point about, you know, the big versus small and big seemingly having a larger voice, but I think you also make the point that strength in numbers can strengthen the voice too. For small businesses that that are listening, you know, what would you say about the value and sharing? I mean, it's one thing to be knowledgeable on the issue, like you clearly are, but just sharing your story with or your concerns with legislators?
No, it's always, I mean, they want to hear from real people. I mean, it doesn't feel like it, even, you know, no matter what your political ideology is, your representatives do want to hear from you. Every once in a while, you tell the right story at the right time, and it's right next to an issue they're working on, and it really helps them, you know, make better decisions. But if they don't hear the feedback, they have no idea, right? And so it's really, really important to talk to your legislators about what's going on with you and what's going on with your business and what's going on in your life, and how it can be made better.
Yeah. Well, looking to the ahead, what are the things that keep you up at night? What are your concerns about your small business or the industry or your employees, but also what excites you? What gives you some optimism?
Well, you know, I'm a small business owner in the state of Minnesota. So, you know, just being able to exist as a small business in the state of Minnesota is the thing that keeps me awake every night. Well, if anybody is listening from Minnesota, knows exactly what our legislature just did, took a $17.9 billion surplus, spent it all, and then taxed us more. And by the way, we're going to take that out of the pockets of businesses. And I think the one big thing that people disconnect when they take that path is, like, businesses really don't pay all these taxes. Their consumers pay the taxes, or else the business goes away, right? And so everybody thinks that it's okay because, you know, we're just shedding that burden onto other people. But so that's what keeps me awake at night. And on the exciting side, you know, our industry is really involved in we're water and clean energy. And so the country is, you know, it's beneficial electrification. Some of the stuff that we're doing to try to get into a more renewable sphere has been, you know, really good for our industry because, you know, especially in northern climates, they need to find alternative heating and cooling solutions if they're not going to use fossil fuels for everything, and really geothermal, you know, ground coupling is about the only way to do it. So that's really been a kind of a shot in the arm for our industry, and it's a technology that's just been underutilized across the entire country. So it's pretty exciting to see that moving along, because it is a, you know, it's a 100-year product. I mean, we put in loop fields and energy transfer systems, heat transfer systems. You know, they last a long time. So, you know, compared to some of the other renewable technologies out there, ours has some staying power.
Yeah, that is exciting. That's great. Well, I'll let you get back to actually running your business. We appreciate you taking the time. Is there anything else that you have on the mind that might be good to share with folks that are listening?
Oh, no, just, you know, get involved, stay involved. NFIB is, you know, I got to tell you, I've been, you know, I'm on your leadership council here in Minnesota. And I've spent a lot of time now kind of talking and working with John Reynolds, our state liaison here. And he, it's just been remarkable to work with the NFIB and see how much you guys really are working for all of us to just keep our concerns front and center with people. So yeah, NFIB is a great, great, great place to be a member.
All right, David Henrich, we appreciate your leadership there in the Leadership Council of Minnesota, also for taking the time away from running your business today to chat with us about the issue, and we'll let you get back to it. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Adam.
For listeners interested in learning more about the Regulatory Flexibility Act and legislation in Congress that would protect small businesses by enforcing it, in today's show notes, you'll find more information and a link to urge your lawmakers to strengthen the RFA.
And now I want to thank you, the listeners, for joining us on today's Small Business Rundown. We'll be back every 2 weeks bringing you small business news and analysis from Washington, D.C. and state capitals so that you, whether you're a business owner or a supporter of one, can continue to blaze a trail.
The Small Business Rundown is brought to you by NFIB, the voice of small business. You can find us at nfib.com and on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn.